Ah, mmm. The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Hello, all you positive heads out there. It's so good to be back with all you beautiful reflections of the one source consciousness that creates and animates all things. If you're new to this podcast, of course, we are super happy to have you here, and we just ask that you bring an open mind and heart to your listening experience and to be prepared to explore vantage points that I'm convinced will help shift or solidify your current understanding of the ultimate nature of reality. While listening, you'll be exposed to inspiring, empowering, and unifying perspectives that I'm highly confident will yield stellar results in your life if you opt to try them on for size. Also, at optimistic.tv, we have officially begun releasing the first few episodes of our new late-night style, consciousness-elevating video variety talk show, Optimistic, which features live visionary art, soul share interviews, retreat guests here at the Mystic Manor, as well as live musical performances. I'm also super excited to announce that we are currently making plans to release the rest of season one on my personal favorite online streaming service. So stay tuned to optimistic.tv to follow the unfolding development of this exciting Optimistic expansion, as we'll be posting more info and release dates there soon. And in the meantime, be sure to check out, of course, the first few episodes at optimistic.tv as well. All right, all you positive heads, on this week's Soul Share episode, I'm very excited to have Dr. Bernie Siegel here with me on the show. Bernie is a former assistant clinical professor of surgery at Yale who went on to become a New York Times best-selling author after writing a myriad of books, including several very recently, one of which is called Three Men, Six Lives, which explores a fascinating fictional account born of Bernie's own experience of his current and past lives. Super excited to jump into all of this and hear more about it. Bernie, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so this is right up. This is one of my favorite topics.
With your introduction, but because I speak the truth, I tell stories about my experience. So yeah. People should know it's not what I believe in or don't believe in. It's what I experience that I share with people.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. Well, I'm excited to dive in. And, you know, before we do, couple things. I always like to start with a couple sort of canned questions to give an idea of who we're chatting with. And the first is this. You're in an elevator. The woman next to you looks over, says, "What's your passion?" What do you say? You got 10 floors to answer.
Oh, you don't know all the things I do in elevators. but passion is my passion is to love life and help people. I was just reading the other day about Mahatma Gandhi, whom I love, and somebody said to him, you know, what is your life about? What's the meaning of your life? And the person writing this said Gandhi had one day a week where he doesn't talk to anyone. So he grabbed the piece of paper and he wrote down the meaning, the message of my life is my life. You know, my life is the message. And
you're right.
I say that's what I live too. I try to, what I call, live the sermon.
Right. And
so whether it's on an elevator or anywhere else, I try to help people get on, get off, and everything else. But one thing I love doing on elevators, because people are always so worried about how they look and act.
Right.
and I would make up a foreign language. So I'd get on the elevator with my wife and I'd go, and my wife would bust out laughing because she knew I was being, you know.
Yeah, right.
And but everybody in the elevator I knew was thinking, oh my God, what is he talking? What
am I looking what, are they laughing at me?
My eye open, you know, something right, like that.
Right, right.
They start looking themselves over. And it was just so funny how embarrassed everybody is when they, you know, don't know what is he talking about.
That's, you know, it makes me think of when my son was like 4, 5, 6 years old, every time we'd go to the grocery store, I would go up behind people who were like looking in the freezer section or whatever. And I'd be there with my, you know, little son, and I would start meowing and, you know, making these cat noises. And then the person would look around and I'd be like, Bradley, you know, what are you doing? And then the person would be like, oh, silly kids these days. And I'm like, yeah, silly kids. And he would always just look like so dumbfounded because I would set him up. So
one more thing for people. The elevator door opens, you know, people would say, going up or down? And I'd say, of course. What else could I do?
Yeah, right.
And the door starts closing and they don't know what to do.
Right. Of course. I love it. We're definitely cut from the same cloth because that sort of stuff is what really, to me, makes life the most, it's the most joyous, you know, yeah, playful silliness like that is the funnest thing.
I mean, my wife did stand-up comedy.
Oh, really?
I realized how beneficial that was to everybody's health. Because on one night, instead of going in the audience and taking her seat while she went up to the podium, it was an awkward climb down. So I stayed up there and I was really impressed with how the audience changed physically after 15 minutes of laughter.
Yeah.
And I noticed that she would get more thanks at the end of the evening than I did. I could talk for 2 hours. She'd have them laugh for 15 minutes and more people would come over and thank her. And so I really made it an integrated part of the presentation to get people to be aware. Laughter, these are just like some, not her lines, but what it means. Laughter increases your face value. He who laughs lasts. And laughter is contagious. Be a carrier.
Right. I love it. So true. Yeah, I've seen it said where, you know, laughter will boost your immune system for like 24 hours, and being angry will, you know, harm it for a few hours.
For his thesis, he told his professor, he was down at University of South Florida, he got in touch with me to support him because his professor didn't think it would make sense. He said he wanted to show how your emotions affect immune function and stress hormone levels. And the professor thought, how's that going to make a difference? Because he said he wanted to show it with actors.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, reinforced his request and the professor said, all right, you can do it. And he took a male and female actor and actress. And one scene was a comedy scene. The other was their meeting after the man had murdered her husband. They run into each other.
Mm-hmm.
And they acted the script and he drew the blood while they were talking. And of course, what he said was true. In the comedy, immune function went up, stress hormone levels went down. In the tragedy, stress hormone levels went up and the immune function went down.
Wow.
And, you know, it's so obvious. So we also have studies that show if you laugh for no reason, you have a better survival rate, whether it's with cancer or even COVID, you know, the virus. If you laugh for no reason, every 3 or 4 hours, your immune function is much improved.
Wow. That's incredible. So if you would share a little bit of your backstory, I always like to have, you know, get an idea who we're talking to. And obviously, I'm sure you've got a very colorful backstory, whatever feels the most relevant to share.
Well, what changed my life, literally, was going to a medical conference. And I say medical, it was run by a physician, Carl Simonton. Uh-huh. And I was the only doctor in the room out of about 150 people.
Yeah.
It blew my mind. that not another doctor in the state of Connecticut showed up, and it was helping cancer patients.
Wow.
I went because I didn't want to just be a mechanic. You know, I wanted to offer cancer patients everything I could, not treat their disease, which is right. What most doctors focus on. As Jung said 100 years ago, the diagnosis helps the doctor, but it doesn't help the patient. But there, the key thing is the story. Mm. And one of my patients, this is her exact statement, and I keep saying, I wish I could find her to thank her. She said, you know, I said to her, what are you doing here? What? She said, you're a nice guy. I feel better when I'm in the office with you, but I can't take you home with me. So I need to know how to live between office visits.
Wow.
I came back to the office on Monday. My partner, who is a very intuitive fellow, Richard Selzer, and he looked at me as I walked in the door and said, you're gone. I said to him, what are you talking about? I'm gone. He said, you're not the same person you were on Friday. You're going to leave surgery. And I thought he was nuts, but he was so intuitive and so right. Because about 10 years later, I quit surgery to help people. And what I did shortly after that meeting and the patient saying that to me was start support groups for cancer patients.
Wow.
And then, you see, I began to learn what most psychiatrists learn. There's a reason people don't die when they're supposed to, if you know what I mean. And that could be dying in a week when the insurance company says, we're not going to pay for cataract surgery. You have lung cancer and you're going to die in 6 months. So we're not wasting money on it. And he died in a few days. He went home, climbed into bed and died because he had no life without his vision. He couldn't do the things he loved. And then there are others who you meet 6 years later and you say, how come you didn't die when you were supposed to? And they always had a story to tell you about their life.
Mm.
You know, it's for people to understand, it's like the Monday morning syndrome. We have more heart attacks, strokes, suicides, and illnesses on Monday. It's about how you're feeling. So when people said, oh, I only have a few months to live, then I think I'll go have a good time and enjoy myself. And things from moving across country to a beautiful area, to buying a house on the ocean, to getting a dog, to making the world beautiful. I was a landscaper. He said, so when I die, I leave a beautiful world. And none of those people died when they were supposed to. And the funniest right. part is when you call up to say, how come you didn't invite me to the funeral? You know, I'm angry at the family. And the person you thought had a funeral answers the phone.
Right.
And the classic one was this fellow who moved to Colorado to die in the mountains. And a year later, no call for the funeral. So I called up and he answered. He said, these were his simple statement. It was so beautiful here, I forgot to die. Boom.
And love
you
know, that.
You say that. See, doctors call that a spontaneous remission. And that's where they're missing out. It wasn't spontaneous. In his book, Cancer Ward, Solzhenitsyn uses the term self-induced healing. Mm. One of the men finds it in a book about cancer. And that's what I learned. When you don't die when you're supposed to, it's self-induced.
Right.
And it's very obvious between men and women. Women outlive men with every disease as well as in their life, because it's about relationships. See, I've had women in the office say, I can't die till they're all married and out of the house.
Right.
I've had men in the office say, there's no point in living. I can't work anymore. And their wife and children are sitting with them.
Right.
Oh, and, you know, I never stopped talking. I told you. One of my best.
You warned me.
was a lady who had cancer. Her adult uh-huh. children came into the office with her. And they said to me, we have to tell you something. She has 12 cats. Her house stinks. We don't even visit her anymore. So we'll get rid of the cats, clean the house, and then we can start, you know, her cancer treatment. I said, no. They look at me, no. I said, you get rid of 12 cats, your mother's dead. Mm. What you do is clean the house and tell her, nobody wants 12 cats, Mom. then she can't die.
Right.
And they were so grateful to me in the ensuing years, because they'd walk into the office, look at me and break out in a big smile, say, you know, thank you.
For what right. And the cat's had kittens, so she's now 138. Oh, wow. So I love the topic that you are exploring in your new book. I have not had the opportunity to read it, but I love the premise of what you did, which is, you know, write a fictional account about, you know, some people's past lives and lives that intersect. And one of which is based off of your own experience. Right. I would love to hear, to me, you know, past lives, parallel lives, this whole topic of conversation is just, it's such a fascinating one. And I'd love to hear, you know, whatever you feel like sharing.
Right. No, I always say what I believe in, I experience.
Yeah.
When I was 4 years old, I had a near-death experience choking on a toy. I didn't know that was an unusual circumstance.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When you're 4 years old, you figure everybody knows this. You know, it must be something that happens commonly.
Yeah.
So I never got into it. But one of the things it taught me was that I'm not my body. Because when I would talk about it, I would say the boy on the bed. And one day I thought, why do you keep saying the boy on the bed? It's you. And I realized, no, it isn't me.
Right.
I'm the consciousness that left the body.
Right.
And I also realized later in my life, I have an angel. And I mean that literally now because I've met him. And I thought, well, the boy on the bed vomited and that's why he didn't die, because he, you know, all the pieces came flying out. And then I realized years later, no, your angel did a Heimlich maneuver on him. That's why you started breathing again and didn't die. And I'll get back in a minute. But as long as I've mentioned the angel, this was somebody I met in a meditation, walking on a path. And along comes this creature, you know, this person. And, you know, you'll meet him, et cetera, et cetera. As I began to go off lecturing, I noticed that what I was saying, like talking to you, I don't have anything prepared. I don't have an outline. I used to. And one night I realized I'm not following my outline.
Right.
All the things I plan to say, I'm not saying. You know, I'm saying other things in another order. So I just said to myself, well, go ahead. It's really good. And at the end of my lecture, the first person said, I heard you before. It was better than usual. The second person said, standing in front of you for the entire lecture was this man. So I drew his picture for you. And it was my angel.
Oh, wow.
Because how he looked, he has a big beard. He had a funny cap on his head. I didn't understand when I first met him, white robe, spiritual looking. Then a year later, I was speaking at a funeral in the same sanctuary, same place called Mercy Center. And after it, when the funeral procession was leaving, a healer named Algar Worrell, a mystic, said to me, Bernie, are you Jewish? I said, why do you want to know? Because I spoke at a Christian funeral? No, there's a rabbi standing right next to you. And I realized that was George. That's his name. And why he was dressed the way he was, because he was wearing that Jewish outfit, so to speak, from what was common in the 1800s, the type of prayer cap and everything else. And from then on, I just rely on him. I know he's there. And I can rely on him to tell me what to say. And the hard part is getting him to stop.
That's a, you know, I have a funny synchronicity with that, because there is, you know, I live at a property in Venice Beach, California, that's a big kind of communal property. And Someone recently moved in who has my birthday, and I have an incredible synchronicity story with my birthday of just, it just repeats and shows up in my life again and again and again and really wild, in a wild way. So this guy recently moved in. He has my birthday. I'm like, oh gosh, here we go, of course. And then within a few weeks, he starts having experiences where he's connecting with someone, a being that he says, and it kind of came to a head with him where it was a very intense experience for a few days. And it was, the character's name is George. So I thought this just is something that we've just went through here, at my house. So it's really interesting.
Let me get back to past lives. But see, years ago, I drew a picture for Elizabeth Kubler-Ross.
Uh-huh.
And what Jung taught was that numbers have quantity and meaning.
Yes.
And I drew a picture for her, and she said, why is 11 important? I said, why are you asking? She said, you drew 11 trees. And then I had an answer for her about what the 11 meant to me. And even I had a reporter. So I can tell you, I used a box of crayons and started getting my patients to draw all kinds of pictures. And it was incredible to me what they portrayed in the drawings. You know, it's no different than a dream. You're putting right. things out there and what it meant to you. And one day a reporter came in when I was still the controversial Dr. Siegel. Everybody talked to me when I was on all these talk shows so that people could argue with me.
Right.
You know, they never told me that. You know, it's like you invite me for an interview, and then when I get to the interview, you find out there are three doctors sitting there to argue with you about all the things you're saying and doing. But
right.
So now I'm trying to get back. Oh, I know. The reporter. She came in, and I could tell she thought I was sort of a nutcase. You know, what does the mind have to do with it? How does your emotions make a difference? And I said to her, draw a picture for me, and then we'll sit down and talk. And I came out. She handed me her picture. She drew herself with a rather large head, which I knew was her intellectual nature.
Right, right, right.
Over herself on the wall, like behind her, was a clock with one hand pointed at 12.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to her, I thought, I got to try to shake her up. I said, what happened when you were 12 years old?
Mm.
I don't like deadlines. I said, there's only one hand on the clock. And boy, then she came apart. Because she'd been wow. sexually abused as a 12-year-old.
Wow.
And then the interview changes. And
wow.
It's been amazing to me, whether it's medical students, you know, my patients, others, what it reveals when they put it on paper. And again, they realize they did the drawing, if you know what I mean. It's not me.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's not me making things up, or it's what they are telling me in the images. And so I really began to use it with all my patients in the hospital, in the support group, because even with treatment, you could draw the devil giving you poison as chemotherapy, or it can be a gift from God. And I can tell you, one person has no side effects and responds beautifully, and the other one has every side effect and isn't doing well at all. And
yeah.
It's getting them to change their image, how the mind programs the body, in a sense, to react, you know,
right.
to the poison or to the react to the gift from God. Now, to get back to past lives, I'm busy doing interviews. A friend of mine calls me and I said, I have an interview. I really don't have time to have a long conversation. And she said, why are you living this life? She didn't like how busy I was.
Right.
And I went into a trance. I said to her, oh, my God. She said, what is it? What's the matter? I said, you said that, and I went into a trance. I saw myself with a sword in my hand, killing people.
Wow.
Animals, you know, their pets. And I said, I can't believe it. Wow, maybe that's why I'm a surgeon, to help people with a knife.
Wow.
And then I came back into consciousness. But you see, to me, what it explains to me is who we are and why we are who we are. Because one of the things I always remembered, since the time I was a little pipsqueak, I kept saying to my parents, I want a dog, I want a dog, I want a dog. And I know it's because I killed people's dogs.
Wow.
So they wouldn't attack me when I was going to kill them. I can tell you this story. But
wow.
And because as a kid, why would I keep saying I want a dog? And my parents, it drove them crazy because they didn't want a dog.
Right, right.
But anyway, the thing I realized was many, I don't know, probably a few months later, I'm traveling cross country alone. I mean, on a plane, but my wife wasn't with me. And I went into a trance, you know, having all these hours just sort of resting. And I saw myself as a knight, I'm sure in Ireland. And I was told by my Lord, go kill the neighbor's daughter. I don't like what her father's doing to property that we own and they're doing things too. And I said, well, why don't I kill him? No, I want you to kill her. And if I don't, then I'll kill you.
Wow.
So I went and I killed this young woman. And when I went into her bedroom at night, because I wanted to kill her at night and when it wouldn't be so painful, and while she was sleeping, but she had a dog in the room. And I know that's where it all came from. And I killed the dog because he was starting to growl at me. And that woke her up. And she turned over in the bed and I saw my wife lying there.
Whoa.
And I slammed the sword down and chopped her head off. And brought it back to my Lord. And I said, now you're happy. He said, I didn't do this. And I believe me, I cried for hours and hours and hours. And therapist James Hillman, boy, he straightened me out in 2 minutes. Because as soon as I said to him, my Lord asked me to kill the neighbor's daughter. He said, you hear what you're saying? I said, what do you mean what I'm saying? You keep saying my Lord. I said, well, it's the Lord of the castle. No, Bernie, it's your Lord. You have to go home and relive this. And wow, that redirected my life. Because wow. Faith was always something I would question. And I don't mean that in a negative way.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with God. But my question was, why did God make a world like this?
Yeah.
I did a lot. Children's surgery. Why do you make a child who's got a congenital defect that needs surgery? Or why does a child get cancer? What do you want from them? So I always had this kind of, you know, question in my mind. What kind of creator are we dealing with?
And
I would question also two people, Abraham and Jesus. Because Abraham asked to sacrifice his son, and I thought, why doesn't he argue with God?
Yeah.
It's his kid. Why didn't he tell God, take my life, leave the kid alone?
Yeah.
And my sense of humor would have made me a little bit nutsy as a Jesus, but I would have jumped off the cross. See? I would have shown them that I can perform miracles. And I would have climbed down and said, now everybody, you see what I just did? Now pay attention and I'll teach you about life.
Right.
But I knew that it was their faith. So when I had faith, when he said, relive it, I said to my Lord, okay, I'm going. He said, I just wanted to know I could rely on you and you had faith in me. Bring them here. Let us solve the problem. So I went and ultimately convinced them that I'm not lying, not, you know, trying to bring them and have them killed and let's go and work it out. And the father heard me talking to the daughter. He said, I know I can believe you from the way you're talking to my daughter, so we'll go. And the ultimate solution, and that's what I realized is what has happened in this life. My Lord said, you know, I can see that you and the young lady have developed a relationship. Why don't the two of you get married? We'll give you the land as a wedding present and there'll be nothing for us to fight over anymore. And boy, when that happened, I thought, wow, my wife and I have healed our families in this life by getting married.
Okay, so this story is really fascinating. I just want to make sure I'm following. So when you went in the first time, she rolled over and you did actually kill her.
Yeah, I killed her. Yeah. Yeah, I wanted to kill her while she's sleeping.
Yeah.
And the noise of the dog woke her up, so she turned towards me, and that's when I saw mm-hmm. who she was and just brought the sword down, wham, and ended her life.
And then you went back to the Lord of the Castle, you reported back and told him what
yeah,
you'd done.
I went back to the guy I was working for and said, here, I've yep. done it. You happy?
Yep.
And
yep.
I handed him a head. And that's wow. when he said, I didn't do this. You did.
Yeah.
And that's when I knew I needed to understand the whole business about Lord and faith. And
right.
Because I mean, when I would read, well, I really questioned about Abraham and Jesus. And, you know, those were things that came up in my mind, trying to understand why they went through this without, you know, requesting something of God or showing God that yeah. he didn't have to do that, et cetera.
Right. So I can understand fully. So, okay. So you did that, but are you talking about in this lifetime where there was a marriage that happened? And it
yeah.
was,
yeah, my wife okay. in this life was the woman I killed in the past life. Her face. I knew her face.
Wow.
And where we met was working at a day camp. I was working with first grade boys. She was working with first grade girls. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you, she was going to be, and did become a teacher. So she was the head counselor for the girls. I was the lowest skilled counselor for the boys. And she's so pretty. I never would have asked her out on a date because I thought she'd say, no thanks. But one day we were watching the kids at the pool, and I said to her, you know, it's really nice, because this was a camp that was near where we both lived. So we would spend the day at the camp and then could go home. I said to her, you know, it's really nice that they keep the pool here open at night. So if it's a hot, you know, summer night, you can come over and take a swim. And she said to me, are you asking me for a date? And I wasn't. I was describing how nice it was. But as soon as she said, are you? I said, oh, yeah, yeah, of course. And she said, all right, I'll. And that started our life together. And I wow. always say another line from my friend Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, no coincidences.
Right.
You know, future is, and this is from Jung, the future is unconsciously prepared long in advance and therefore can be guessed by clairvoyance. So the true, you know, clairvoyants, mystics, they're reading you and your consciousness. And I've met them too. See, this is, again, what keeps my mind open. I had a past life experience, so I don't doubt it. Then yeah. somebody comes into my office, says, who's my patient? I realize you're not a normal doctor, so I brought a message from you, for you. She brought me a message from a dead patient. I knew who she was talking about. She said his name. When I called his wife, he said, oh, yeah, that's what he said all the time when he left your cancer meetings, because that was the quote I got. And
gotcha.
Then the other, I mean, and I would get many phone calls from her. Her name is Monica. But when my wife died 2.5 years ago, quietly in her sleep, and she died on a Friday. I thought, let's see if I get a phone call from Monica. Is all this real?
Yeah.
Sunday morning, the phone rings. Bernie, I got a phone call from a lovely lady who was an opera singer.
Mm.
She told me that Bobby is fine. She's back with the family. Everything is all right. And when I heard that, wow.
Cool.
What is my wife's mother? She was a well-known opera singer.
Wow.
Now, the mystic has no way of knowing that. And yet, look what she tells me. And I've had incredible mystical experiences after my wife died. So I don't doubt the, whether you call it paranormal or mystical mm-hmm. world or past life or whatever name you put on it. I know yep. it's for real. because as soon as my wife died, I began having experiences that I knew were her. I mean, one that was wonderful the first couple of weeks. She would
I'd love to hear
me
it.
And when I say kiss me goodnight, it was, this is what I labeled as the kiss. I heard a sound in the room, like somebody blowing out a candle. And then I felt a breeze on my face. And I'm lying there alone.
Yeah.
There's nobody in the room. And that went on every night. After I'd go to bed, and she was kissing me. And one of the most striking, we were married on the 11th. See, numbers.
Mm-hmm.
She was born on 9-9. And the 9 has been incredible. I can tell you about that. But also we married on the 11th. And I began finding a dime and a penny in so many places, you know, beyond explanation. But the most mystical, I'm making the bed in the morning, our same queen-size bed, you know, that we slept in. And I go around to the other side to pull everything back towards the empty side. And as I grabbed the sheets and blankets to pull, they pulled out of my hand and were thrown back on the other side of the bed. I thought, what's going on? But what's lying on the sheet under them? A dime and a penny.
Wow.
In the bed. And you can't explain that one to me.
Yeah.
You know? And it's just amazing. Then I fixed the bed. Oh, and the other was the winter after she died, I said, I need a new pair of gloves. I got a hole in my old gloves. I go shopping down to the supermarket, come back to my car, and there were a pair of gloves lying on the ground next to the driver's door. And same car parked next to me, you know. So you can't tell me, oh, the people dropped the glove when they got into their car.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that stuff has happened. So again, my mind is open. And I know in a sense that we get recycled. But what we need to remember is part of who we become in this life. And I really felt I became a surgeon to do good things with a sword, you know, and to make up for the past. And, that the talents we have too, because another that convinced me was a boy was with a concert orchestra. You know, I was watching television and maybe he was 8 or 9 and he was going to play the violin with the orchestra. And people talked to him about, how do you do this at your age? He said, I don't know. But when I was 5 years old, it's the first time I ever saw a violin. And I ran over and grabbed it and hugged it. And when I heard that, it said to me, yeah, he was a violinist in a past life, and he still has that talent within him.
Yeah.
And that explained how, as a 9-year-old, he can get up there and play it. And I know, you know, when you see many of these kids on TV with all their talents, I'm sure that it relates to a past life. And so they have it within them.
Yeah, I have a friend who, a couple of friends who've been having experiences where they bilocate, because, of course, I'm sure you've heard the theory or concept that, you know, of course, there's time. We're in eternity. We're floating in eternity now. Time is an illusion. So these quote unquote past lives are actually happening parallel in, you know, a timeless state on another channel, so to speak. So I've had a couple friends that have had experiences where they'll be both in this life and the other simultaneously. And I had one friend in particular that the violin story made me think of it, where she was sitting at a piano and it triggered her into a life in like the 1800s where she was sitting at a piano and playing the piano, crying because her partner had just left her or died or something. And because she was so tapped into that life simultaneously, she was actually able to play the same, you know, melody, the same riff on the piano that her other self was playing, even though she's not a piano player in this lifetime. And that's a really fascinating when you start bringing those, you know, merging those realities is just wow.
Yeah, I've seen that in our kids, where one of them could go over to the piano and play it. My opera singing mother-in-law, her old piano, and other kids you could leave them there all day and they couldn't play anything.
Right.
It's amazing. And the other thing that I had to learn, because I would say, oh, this is crazy. How could somebody come back, you know, all these years later? And Elizabeth Kubler-Ross again would say, Bernie, there's no time up right here. And that's right. The thing I had to conceive of, that consciousness has no time associated with it. Because when you're out of your body, you don't get older. It's you. You know what I mean? It's not physical, so it doesn't age. And so time is not an issue as to when these events happen.
Right, right. And, you know, your story is so fascinating. I just want to make sure I followed it completely. So when you said that there you were able to come together and actually were gifted the land, was that this life? Was that another daughter that the people had? I didn't quite follow that.
That it's this life that our marriage merged our families and healed the past. And I'll tell you again, no coincidence. I was reading a story about a guy who bought a farm. Uh-huh. While plowing, he hits something underground, digs it up. It's a treasure chest. So he calls the guy he bought the farm from and said, I found this. It's yours. It was your farm. I just bought it from you. And he said, no, it's yours. You bought the farm. No, it's yours. And they're arguing. And a third guy comes by and said, you know, you have a son, you have a daughter. Tell them to get married and give them this gift. The wedding present. When I read that, it was like, oh. I mean, you know how some things have a greater impact.
Yeah.
Not just a joke. And I knew that it was that connection that my wife and I had done that helped heal the past and resolve all the conflicts.
Right. Wow. Yeah. I often think of that when you hear a story like that. To me, my mind instantly goes, what's the real backstory? You know what I mean? It will be pretty fascinating one day when we have full, unobstructed access to the Akashic Records, right? And we can see the entire backstory.
One other story, it's called Wolfen. A knight comes home. And again, I'm reading this to our five kids, okay? A knight comes home from the war, comes into his castle, goes up to the nursery because he knows his wife has given birth to a child while he's away. And he walks into the room and it's covered in blood. His dog is sitting there covered in blood. The crib is upside down. He takes out his sword and kills his dog. See, another dog case.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes and picks the crib up and there's his healthy child lying next to a dead wolf.
Wow.
And he realizes his dog saved his baby's life and he kills his dog.
Wow.
And I start crying.
Wow.
And the kids are saying to me, what are you crying about? It's just a story. What are you crying about? And I didn't know why I was crying, but ultimately the past life issue, everything. And then I understood why that was such a wallop to read that story. And again, you know, back to me and wanting dogs. And one of my books is called Love, Animals, and Miracles. And it describes the Siegel Zoo. I mean, I've been rescuing animals, you know, basically my whole life. And breaking zoning laws, et cetera. But nobody ever getting upset with us because they knew I was doing it because I cared about animals. So veterinarians would give us all kinds of bizarre exotic pets people didn't want. I mean, there aren't many homes where you have a rabbit running around, mice, who are your pets, snakes. I mean, every creature, skunks, but I was saving them all. Oh, and the other thing I'm always mentioning, ducks and geese we also had, but all the eggs were hatched in the house. So the ducks and geese thought the parents were our children. And see, that again showed me about love. The school year would start. the kids would walk down the driveway to get on the school bus, and the ducks and geese would go with them and try to get on the bus. I mean, the drivers had a sense of humor, so they didn't get mad at me, you know, for the fact that I had to wait and get the ducks and geese to get off the bus. But I realized how connected we all were. And when we put some of the ducks and geese on a lake, a lovely lake near my folks' house, I got a phone call the first time we did it. And my mother said, "I have a question. The neighbors want to know." "What is it, Ma?" "Every time a school bus pulls up, the ducks and geese walk half a mile from the lake all the way up to the road." "Why?" I said, "They're looking for our children." It broke my heart to think that they felt like they were separated from their parents now and in a new place. But it you know, the animals really become teachers, give us a reverence for life. And I have to say that, you know, in the past life experience, those are things that come with us. Even if they're at an unconscious level, they're still participating in the choices we make, whether it's related to pets or jobs or anything else. Because one of our kids came home from school, he in an art class, he took the word "words" and wrote it all over this canvas. But he wrote it with no space between words, words, words. And when he walked in the door, it was therapy for me too, because words, words, words become swords, swords, swords.
Ah, wow.
And that's hanging on the wall in the house. And I really thought, okay, you can help people with words or a sword.
Yeah.
Kill them with words or a sword.
Right.
And again, I'd say it's no coincidence. The teacher said to him, "Why did you do this?" You know, I don't know why he did it either, but there was something in him. And I really felt he had a connection to me, you know, and maybe my past, and did it for me. Wow. So all these things are part of life. And the three people I might as well mention in the book are a mafia don, a psychiatrist, and a surgeon. And my story goes with the surgeon, though I give him a different name in life. Mm-hmm. You know, but I let people know that it is something I've experienced. See, for instance, why would you become a psychiatrist? Well, what if your actions in a past life hurt many people physically? Well, you know, so maybe in this life you're trying to help. And the mafia don, maybe his family was assaulted and attacked and things happened to them in a past life. And he's going to be the tough guy in this life and nobody's going to come after his family. He'll be coming after them. And so all these things, and I may add, writing it, it always comes from God knows where. And I'll tell you what I mean by that, because in college I had one C in 4 years. In creative writing.
Wow.
Because I was busy thinking as a science major, you know, going to be a doctor, studying all these sciences. And so I would think about writing. And it wasn't, you know, as the teacher said, it's all intellectual. It isn't fun to read.
Yeah.
And now it's coming, as my wife would say, from God knows where. It's coming from my consciousness. So I read the books I've written over and over again. It's like somebody else wrote them.
Right.
And I'm proud of myself sometimes when I'm reading and say, "Wow, that's good."
Yeah.
Because it's not my intellect that did it. And well, let me give you one more. Mario Puzo, Godfather. Sure. He was a friend of mine.
Oh, really?
And
wow.
He would say, "I'm going in, you know, my office. I got to get some writing done." And then his girlfriend, who and I were outside, and she'd look in and she said, "He's not doing anything." So she'd go to the door and say, "Mario, you said you were going to write. You're not writing." And he said, "I'm waiting for the character to tell me what to write."
Yeah.
That taught me what real writers are doing. You know, they're bringing forth another level of consciousness and putting it in their novel or whatever. And I think that's a place that I have finally gotten to, you know, with all the troubles I've had and emotions and everything else. So I tell everybody, keep a journal. It's like the book on poetry I mentioned. Why was I writing poetry? It's getting my feelings out.
Yep.
So I write about events. And then connected with our grandson, who's way ahead of me, because at age 30, he's doing what, say, I would do at 50 or 60. I mean, he's right. So sensitive, and I was thrilled with all his stuff. But if people will do that, write down what you're feeling at the end of the day. And my wife gave me an important lesson. Don't forget the humor, because I never put anything funny in it. And fortunately, she found my journal one night when I didn't hide it and said, there's nothing funny in it. And she told me funny stories I told her and the kids about things that happened that day in the hospital, and they never got written about. So I started remembering the good things too. And one, I got to tell you that I think it may be at the end of the book, No Endings, Only Beginnings. My wife used to make lunch for me because as a surgeon, the emergencies and things happening, it was crazy.
Yeah.
So I have this red bucket with the word love in white all over it.
Hmm.
And I pop it open, and my wife would always have a note in it with hugs and kisses and love and little drawings of the family and all our pets.
Sweet.
One day, innumerable emergencies. I mean, I was going nuts in the emergency room.
Yeah.
And about 3 o'clock, finally, a few minutes, I grab my lunch pail, I pop it open, and instead of the usual note from her, it just said, hold on. And I thought, incredible. Wow. How did she know what was going to happen today?
Yeah.
Amazing. So I pulled myself together and held on. It really, thank God for that note. I get home that night. I said to her, thank you, when I walked in the house. For what? Your note. I don't know how you knew what kind of day I was going to have, but I held on, and your note did so much for me. She said, honey, it was a big sandwich with a lot of vegetables. I just wanted you to hold on. I have never forgotten it.
That's wonderful.
But, you know, no coincidences again.
No, yeah, it's all connected in the most incredible, you know, way. It's all woven together. And when you start to see that, there's, you know, I would say the reason she made that ridiculous sandwich that day was so that she could really get to that note, which then could have another meaning, which it's just incredible.
And, you know, that's what I say, no coincidence. And so many things have happened as we've traveled around the country. And even when once we got lost looking for the place we were supposed to give the lecture, and a car in front of us had a license plate, I'm lost.
Mm.
So I knew to go talk to them. Another time I was lost. I said to a guy, I need to go to this street. He said, I don't know where it is, but I know where the police station is. They'll help you. The police station was on the street I was looking for. I mean, it's, you know, things that you remember, who you meet, who you run into, the things people tell you. But I think when you quiet your mind, and that's the key, because that symbol, the still pond, ugly duckling sees he's a swan on a still pond. I always say if he was cursing his mother for throwing him out of the house, he's never going to realize who he is. And I'd say the message to people I'd love to leave them with is quiet your mind.
Yeah.
That's how you communicate with animals. And I mean that literally, because I have an animal intuitive friend, and I've learned from her how to talk to animals in your mind, quietly, peacefully, and they'll talk back to you too. So it's that common theme, the quiet mind.
Yeah.
And when you quiet your mind, then the coincidences start happening, because you're not interfering by letting your intellect think, what should I do? Which way should I go? What should I say? Where should I live? Who should I marry? You know, it's pay attention to your heart and your conscience. Yeah,
absolutely. It's all the difference in, you know, riding the waves, surfing the waves of life versus paddling upstream against the current, right? Mm.
One young lady put on her refrigerator, I always think of it, when you live in your heart, magic happens. Mm. And that's like the stories I told you about patients with cancer who go home and start living in their heart and notice the physical benefit they derive from it.
Absolutely.
Because it's loving your body. Let me put it that way too. One young lady who was dying and said, I don't want to die angry and hating my body. Because she said, I had polio as a child and I've always been deformed. So I lay naked. And I keep saying, I don't make up any of these stories. She said, I lay down naked in front of a mirror and started loving my body from the toes all the way up inch by inch. And her disease went into remission.
Wow.
And she didn't die.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you meet people like that, it really wakes you up. And you can't deny them. And that's why I became a storyteller. You know, I'm not trying to argue with somebody about a study and statistics. I'm just telling you something about a person I knew or my own.
Yep. Life. Yep. And you know, when you start, you take a story like that and there are, you know, just countless stories like that. And the doctors just scratches their head and sends them home. Right. And yeah. It's because they're not playing in that field of, you know, okay, there's much more. Yes, there is certainly a time and place and usefulness for statistics and studies and, you know, modern medicine. And then there's something more.
Yeah. And we have to learn not to treat the diagnosis, not to say, here's a pill, but to say what you're experiencing. Because much as I said about drawings, that shows what people are experiencing. You know, whether you say, draw your home and family, or where do you want to live, or what occupation, draw your choices. But also, you know, within us is that intuitive knowledge. And I think when people, again, can be quiet and listen to themselves, then the right things get done. And the interesting thing is, as doctors, we separate your head from your body, meaning that when I sent articles to medical journals, it came back saying interesting, but not appropriate. You know, it was about drawings, feelings, and I'll mention, and words. When you said to people, what are you experiencing? If they said, oh, pressure, that's what my pain feels like. What's the pressure in your life? Boom, her headache's gone. She's on the way home to straighten it out. Say, failure. Right. Well, my body failed. I have cancer. My question is, how does failure fit your life? Oh, my parents committed suicide when I was a child. I must have been a failure as a child. Boom.
Mm.
You know, so that's the thing I've learned. When you just say, here's a pill for your depression, that doesn't change anything. But I've learned to treat people's experience. And it was amazing the things that happened and then the things they would share with you because you woke them up to it.
Right.
And I'd say, people, you don't need a doctor to do that for yourself. If you're having a problem, physical or emotional, say, how would I describe this to other people? And then look at the answer you come up with and what in your life fits that. Yeah, when I was having vertigo, you know, the room is spinning around. And that's what I said to myself. Well, the room is spinning around. The world is going around. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, what you need to do is rest. You're doing too much. You're going too many places. So your body's doing you a favor. It's forcing you to lie down. And I mean, that really woke me up when I became my own patient, and it was so helpful.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And you also see how, you know, we all have that inner healer. I mean, I personally believe when someone is a healer, or, you know, especially when you get into more energetic type healing, it's like they're just creating or holding the container for you to heal yourself.
You see, in the book, again, the psychiatrist was a lot like what I was also, because the first time I was asked in a group meeting, do a meditation, I thought, oh, this is such nonsense. I came to learn something, not close my eyes and, you know, and make pictures. But again, I'm a visual person. I'm an artist. I don't know if I mentioned that earlier, but I've done a lot of portrait painting and other things. And but I knew the person running the workshop could see that I'm sitting there with my eyes open staring at him. So I better close my eyes so he won't know I'm not doing it. And when I closed my eyes, I had an incredible experience. So I couldn't deny, you know, like that's when I met my inner guy, George, and other things. And I couldn't deny what I experienced. So I realized, yeah, you got to do these things. That wisdom is within you. And it can come in a dream. It can come in a drawing. I always say God speaks in dreams and symbols. So you want to quiet your mind to let these symbols come forth. And then you can interpret them and understand yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you've done a lot, Bernie. What is most exciting for you? You know, what's most alive for you now? What are you focused on?
Well, I focus on living the sermon. I try to live what I preach. Let's put it that way. And to help people. I got a big thrill the other day. I got a phone call from somebody in Connecticut that I know who said her sister in Japan wanted to thank me for how much help I have given her through my books and things. Mm. And that to me is just the greatest gift.
It really
Here
is.
Here I am helping somebody in Japan.
Great.
Now, I've been to a lot of foreign countries, yes, but it's still, I haven't been to Japan, and how many people around the world have read what I have written or have emailed me and talked to me and have been helped to survive and to live with their difficulties. And, you know, I don't make people immortal. You know, it isn't about just not dying. It's about helping them live.
Yes.
And that's the part that they're always so grateful for. And they get in touch with me about, thank you for helping, you know, giving them tools with which to work and live. And as I say, that's my greatest gift. That, and I think, I forgot who said it, but she said, love is immortal and makes all things immortal. Mm. And that's why I remember it's William Saroyan. In his book, The Human Comedy, the best part of a good man stays forever, for love is immortal and makes all things immortal. And that's what we have to realize. You want to live forever? Love somebody.
Yeah.
So in many ways, I feel I have achieved immortality by helping so many people.
Yeah, I love that. That is a powerful truth and realization, and it's one of those things where I think personally, you know, talking about other lives, past lives, parallel lives. It's like the thing that the tie that binds across all of them is love, right? And yes, that is the reason for all of it, for all the charade.
Right. Because if somebody has felt your love and how particularly important it is for us to love our children, this would be a wonderful world if every child were loved. Because when you look at the statistics, the kids who cause trouble are seeking revenge. The kids, and this was a Harvard study, children who while at Harvard said, my parents didn't love me. Mm. By the time they were middle-aged, 98% had suffered a major illness in this study. And those who said, my parents loved me, only 24% had suffered a major illness by middle age.
Yeah. Wow.
So you see what a different world it would be if everybody were loved and taking care of themselves.
Yeah.
And I may add also, I have to, what I put in my past life book is my sense of humor, that people ought to try this. Name your dog sex See, one of the characters in the book is a veteran who's lost his leg while he was in the service. And he always wants a dog, and his wife tells him, no, no, you can't have a dog. I don't want a dog in the house. And then he reads in the paper that there's a dog at the shelter who lost a leg when he was hit by a car. So he goes and just adopts it and brings it home because he isn't going to say no to that one.
Right.
And he brings it home to his wife, and he says, I'm going to name him Tripod. And his wife said, no, that's, you can't just focus on what's wrong with the dog. And you've got to start wearing an artificial leg instead of wanting sympathy from everybody by showing them you only, you know, you've lost one leg. So if you'll change how you behave and give the dog a different name, I'll accept him. So he starts wearing his leg and he says, all right, honey, I'm going to call him Sex. And the wife doesn't know what to do with him. But I mean, that I just love that. You know, if the neighbors don't like your dog, you can ask them, is Sex a problem for you?
Yeah.
So wherever you go, you know, if people want to know about your dog, you bring up Sex. And yeah. ultimately, his wife begins to laugh and realizes having sex in bed isn't a bad thing.
That's hilarious. And,
but, you know, those are parts of me. And they, I can't help but put them in a book, if you know what I mean. It just sort of pops yeah. out and, yep. and comes.
Well, I appreciate anyway. You. You
I've
sharing
had so many
all,
all right, my next all, one will be Sex.
Yeah. You know, what I thought of too when we were talking about love a moment ago is you know, this thing as considering that love is the only thing that really survives and matters throughout, you know, eternity. It's the only sort of the only thing that makes the you know, the vastness of eternity bearable, I would say, from a certain perspective, and how empowered we all are when we realize we have the ability, no matter where you're at, what your financial situation is, what your bank account looks like, to be loving, and that being tapping into the ultimate abundance and wealth. And if you consider everyone who is acting out or being ugly or, you know, committing a crime, we've talked a lot about animals. I heard it said, and I love this thought, you know, if consider them like they're like an animal who's, you come across an animal in the woods whose leg is caught in a trap. Right. And you go to free it and it tries to bite you because it's scared and it's hurt. And that if you can look at everyone who is ugly as an animal with they're caught in a trap and that's why they're acting out, it sort of shifts the perspective on, you know, on who they're hurting. Right. They're scared. They're hurting. And therefore they're snarling. Right.
Well, in East of Eden, John Steinbeck, I came across this line. We all experience rejection. With rejection comes a desire for revenge. With revenge, guilt. And there is the story of mankind.
Mm.
And that's what we see. You know, who takes a gun and goes and kills people? Who drives a car into a crowd?
Yeah.
It's people who weren't loved. So yep. they're killing the people who didn't love them.
Right.
And I tell people, and this is something all your listeners should take with them for their life. Be a love warrior.
Yes.
The next time somebody is acting in a way that, you know, threatening you or anybody, just let them know, I love you.
Mm.
I have done this out on the street with violent people. And every time they have quieted yeah. down and walked or driven away. If yeah. they were in a car screaming, I want you to know I love you. I'm sorry for whatever's going on in your life, but I love you. Mm. If they're young, I say, I want you to know I love you. I'm sorry your parents don't. Every single time they have shut down, turned, and left.
Wow.
And I can tell you, when you do it on the street, you get a lot of comments from people saying, oh my God, thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And it's the power And I mean it. And they know I mean it when I say, I love you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's coming from an authentic place. And it's you know, it's so true. My favorite quote is, love is the answer now. What was the question? Right. And it's maybe cliche, and it happens to be very, very true. And we need more people out there understanding the power of spreading love, not only for everyone that they affect, but really it's tapping into their own abundance. And it's like I said, no matter who you are or where you're at in your life, you have access, you know, to dig deep down and start accessing more love energy, which then is only going to be reflected in the things that appear in your life.
Yeah, I had a pin made with the word attitude on it for people to wear. And I love what one couple did, because the wife said to me, when my husband isn't doing what's good for him, because he had cancer, I go over to him, I spin the pin around, and I say, honey, straighten out your attitude. And I love her technique, you know, because she's not yelling at him, criticizing him. Honey, straighten out your attitude. And that's what we all need, that kind of symbol. Our kids used to say to me, Dad, you're not in the operating room now, when they were getting annoyed with my behavior, you know, becoming too controlling.
Yeah.
And my wife, with her sense of humor, if I got upset about something, was making noise, she'd say, honey, you're so handsome when you're angry. And of course, I mean, I'd start laughing and couldn't be angry anymore.
Yeah, right, right.
You see, it's after that that you stop and start talking to each other, and then you resolve it. So it's not yelling, oh, you're a terrible person, you're a horrible father, you're...
Yep.
I'm sorry I married you. No, it's that wonderful way of communicating, and then the barriers come down and you start talking to each other.
Right. Well, I have enjoyed talking to you today, my friend. This has been very enlivening and inspiring. For those who want to connect with you and follow your work, what's the best way to do that?
Well, my website is the easiest way, www.BernieSiegelMD.com. So the W is BernieSiegelMD.com. And you can read about some of the articles I've written. All my books are listed. You can send a note through it to me. I'll answer. If I get an email from you or a message from you, I'll get back to you through my email. Because as a kid, my email has the name Bugsy in it. Because when I was a kid, the gangster was prominent. So growing up in New York, all the kids started calling me Bugsy because my last name is Siegel.
Right. That's funny.
You can imagine how proud my mother was to hear people say, hey, is Bugsy here?
Yeah, right. That's funny. Well, I'm glad you had this lifetime, not as a gangster, but as a healer, and you're still doing it all these years later. Such a gift, my friend. I do have one final question for you, and it is this. In 60 seconds or less, what is the meaning of life according to Bernie Siegel, a.k.a. Bugsy?
Well, I'd say life is the meaning. But the meaning is that, as God said to me, Bernie, a perfect world is not creation. It's a magic trick. You're here to live and learn. So life is an opportunity for us to experience it and to live and learn from it and to be what I call God's right arm. Because God needs physical, you know, tools to make changes and to do things. So if we... My sense of humor, you could say, what would God do? But I tell people, WWLD, ask yourself, what would Lassie do? And then go do that. it's learning to give love in your own manner. So how you give it is not imposed upon you. Whatever profession you want or anything else, see it as a way, an opportunity to give love to the world, because you're going to meet people. So whether you're driving a bus and giving everybody on your bus love, or being a doctor or an astronaut or a plumber, you're always going to meet people. So let them feel better after they meet you. And last but not least, accept criticism in a constructive criticism. Let others coach you too. You can say, if there's a better way of doing that, let me know. And so then they become coaches and we all help each other to become better. And last but not least, it's having a reverence for all life.
Yeah.
I've been picking up worms for decades on the street, save their life.
Yeah.
And I assumed it was due to my being neurotic until I read that Albert Schweitzer has been doing that in his life. And he said, you pick up the worm, you put it back on the earth.
Yeah.
And he's always preaching about a reverence for life. So I said, that's what you're here to do.
Yeah.
Demonstrate and be a tool for a reverence for life. Oh, and I'll help everybody. When you get to heaven, where I often go for meetings, there's an I didn't know there was an admission line, but there is. And when you get to the head of the line, they say, how do you want to be introduced to God? If you say, I'm a surgeon, I'm a New York lawyer, they're going to say, come back when you know who you are.
Yeah.
You want to get right in when they say, who are you? I'm God's child. I don't need an introduction. I'm God's right arm. God already knows me.
I love that. Love that so much. Thank you, my friend, for sharing all of your wisdom and good humor. And all of you out there listening, thank you for tuning in. Your beautiful brainwaves and epic hearts. Until next time, journey well. Also, before we sign off, I wanted to remind you about the Game with the Universe on our website. You can choose the first number that comes to your mind and it'll pull up that episode number of the podcast. I've been saying this is a great way to co-create synchronicity and magic with your higher self for quite some time. And if you go to positivehead.com/universe, there is a super fun and simple interface to play this game with your higher self. I firmly believe just by setting the intention to play in this way, it opens up the door for magic, and it's a synchronistic way to hone in on nuggets of wisdom out of the huge catalog of episodes that are specifically appropriate for you at this time in your journey to becoming the next greatest and greatest version of yourself. And it also makes for a super fun way to spark the curiosity of friends and family by having them choose a number. So they'll hopefully go and check out their number as well, which I greatly appreciate because it helps us to spread the word about the podcast. Once again, the address is positivehead.com/universe. And as a quick reminder, if you're curious to learn more about Purium Superfoods and why I take them almost every day, be sure to also check out positivehead.com/transformation. On this journey of becoming the next greatest and grandest version of ourselves that we have all embarked upon, I cannot stress the importance of managing your physical vibration enough. And quite honestly, Purium has put together the simplest plan I've found to do so. I have my favorite, the Appleberry Shake, at least 5 times a week. Once again, to learn more about the Purium Transformation, go to positivehead.com/transformation. Or if you want to keep it simple and just try out my favorite, the Appleberry Shake, you can go straight over to ishoppurium.com and be sure to use code POSITIVEHEAD for 25% off. I'll spell that for you. It's ishoppurium.com. And be sure to use your Positive Head 25% coupon code.